Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, one of the issues that is certainly a big issue in this year's election and a big issue of concern primarily to evangelicals is the issue of religious liberty. Religious liberty, that's what we hear them talking about so often in different ways, but it is an extremely important issue for the church. Of course, because we see so many different attacks coming upon our religious liberty in this day and age. Just the other day, I was reading an article that appeared out in World Magazine. It was appeared in the title of it says this. It was in their religious liberty section, I think, is what they refer to it as on their homepage, but it or on their webpage. It says here that P&G refuses to join the fight against religious liberty. And the subtitle then says, investors rejected a resolution to join the bevy of corporations condemning laws opposed by LGBT advocates. The article goes on to say this, Procter & Gamble shareholders shot down a proposal this week to join the surge of corporate backlash against religious freedom and restroom laws. North Star Assets Management, which owns at least $2,000 worth of P&G stock, proposed at an investor meeting that the company should join Apple and PayPal, Disney and others in the political fight against religious freedom laws in Mississippi and Tennessee, and that they should take a stand against North Carolina's transgender restroom policy. The consumer goods giant overtly rejected the idea, with 94% of shareholders voting against it. There's a quote in the article, and it says this, quote, it's one less major corporation fighting against religious freedom, said Justin Danhoff, director of Free Enterprise Project at the National Center for Public Policy Research. This is a great victory for freedom and for common sense. Well, there we see it. You know, the article goes on to talk about how that one of the reasons why this was rejected was the stand that has been taken against Target and the people that have stopped going to Target because of what they have done. And they feel that P&G has taken notice of that and they, you know, don't want anything to do with it. And rightfully so. I don't know if it's that they're that concerned about religious liberty, but the end result is they're not going to join this this attack against religious liberty that we're seeing take place in this country. A new book is just being released. In fact, maybe today or certainly this week is the date where it is coming out. And the book is referred to as First Freedoms, the beginning and the end of religious liberty. And one of the contributors who penned the chapter called Religious Liberty and the Gospel joins us now. I'm speaking about Dr. Evan Lino. He is the Assistant Professor of Ethics and Associate Director of the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. Evan, it's a pleasure to have you back on the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Well, tell us a little bit, if you would. This book, I think it's a revision of an older version that came out some time ago. But if you would, give our listeners a little bit of an overview of what the entire book is about. And then I want to take some time to zero down into the chapter that you specifically contributed to this book.
Sure. Yeah, the book is a second edition of First Freedom that came out several years ago, but this is really a major overhaul of the book, and there's probably out of the 10 chapters or so, there's only a few that you'll find mostly identical to the original version, so this has been reworked. The whole idea behind this is that religious liberty is a freedom that we enjoy, particularly here in the United States, and is something that is so foundational to how we live as Americans that to some degree we've reached the point where we've taken it for granted. And so this book is a reminder of where religious liberty had its beginnings. It's actually not, the beginnings of religious liberty are not found in the First Amendment. The whole idea of religious liberty predates the founding of the United States, even though we have made it such a core tenet of our governmental structure. And also then we carry it out, so we kind of lay out some of the history of how religious liberty developed. Give some basic introduction to the key points of religious liberty and how it functions both in government and as it relates to the church. And then the book concludes with several chapters relating to contemporary challenges to religious liberty, so particularly as it relates to issues of marriage and the sexual revolution, and then international law and the place of the Christian university here in the United States and the challenges that Christian universities in particular are facing as it relates to religious liberty.
Well, we could hear in that news item that I read, the attacks have certainly increased against religious liberty. Is that something that is unprecedented as we see take place, at least in terms of our history here in this country?
In the United States, I would say it is. This is a new day for us to even think of religious liberty being under attack. Of course, you know our American history. You know, one of certain groups of the early settlers that came to America were seeking religious liberty. That's the whole reason they came. And so, even though not all of the colonies at the beginning had religious liberty worked into their governmental documents, once we established the First Amendment to the Constitution, from that point forward, religious liberty becomes a core element here in the United States. But it really is one of those things, I believe, that because people have taken it for granted, and as our American culture has become more and more secular, there are many people who believe that religious liberty should no longer be protected. And so I think that's why we're facing some of the challenges we're seeing today.
You wrote an article about the chapter that that you write in this book. Again, we're talking, for our listeners' sake, we're talking about the book First Freedom, and we're speaking with Evan Lino, who has contributed to the book, and his section in the book is entitled Religious Liberty and the Gospel. And in that part that you write about, you know, you point out that in this presidential season, campaign season that we're certainly coming to a close of here in just a few weeks, there are certainly really important issues at stake, like the Supreme Court justices and so forth. And whether or not those justices that would be appointed to the Supreme Court, one of the decisions that concerns us most is how would they scale back the freedoms that we have enjoyed as Americans for more than two centuries. Talk about that a little bit. Is that a very real possibility, or is that just hyperbole?
No, I think it's a real possibility. We've obviously lost one of our key conservative justices, and Justice Scalia, who passed away suddenly. The next president will likely, assuming the Senate still refuses to act on President Obama's nomination, the next president will certainly have the opportunity to nominate Justice Scalia's replacement. And then based on the ages of some of the other justices on the court, there may be a total of four justices that are replaced by the next president. And you know, so this is a big deal. If you note in some of the dissents, particularly in the Obergefell decision that came out summer of last year, related to same-sex marriage, Justice Scalia and Chief Justice Roberts and others noted the real religious liberty challenges that were coming because of that particular decision and other decisions from the past, and so the reality of religious liberty and its challenge, particularly at the Supreme Court level, is something we need to be concerned about. That's something we need to be thinking about and we need to be preparing for, because the next president appoints at least one and perhaps as many as four Supreme Court justices. It could change the face of the court for 25 to 30 years.
Wow. You mentioned in your article, and I think it's important that we clarify this right in the beginning, but that many people consider religious liberty to mean freedom of worship, that at whichever house of worship you choose. But it's different than that, right?
Certainly. We hear some of that language. You'll hear people talk about freedom of worship, and they usually refer to your ability to go down the road to your local Baptist church or Methodist church or Presbyterian church or even the mosque or synagogue or someplace like that. And that means you have freedom to worship within that particular building and worship whatever or whomever you choose. But that's only a small component to religious liberty. Religious liberty certainly includes the freedom of worship, but religious liberty really implies an all-encompassing faith. And so this is the idea that you have the free exercise of religion so that every part of your life you can express your religious beliefs. And so this would include everything from going to your place of worship that you want to go to sharing the gospel or sharing your religious message with others, even when people don't agree with it, that you still have that right because that's your free exercise of religion.
Mm-hmm. And so to actually live out your faith, too, to put it into practice, not just where you can, you can go into your religious building and hold your meetings, that's one thing, but to be able to then, what you believe, to actually put that into practice in the marketplace of ideas, in the culture around us and so forth, that's certainly included in that that freedom as well. You liken in your article on your webpage, and by the way, for the listener's sake, again, you can go to Dr. Lino's page where he has written briefly about this subject, but he writes about a number of different subjects there. It's www.evanlenow, but it looks like Lenow. It's L-E-N-O-W, L-E-N-O-W, so evanlenow at .com, and you can go there to find out more about what he's writing about on his blog. You liken in that article out there, you note some of the similarities between first century Rome and between the way that we use religious liberty today in America. Talk a little bit about those similarities.
Yeah, there's a couple of different things to think about. First of all, the early church was coming up in a very syncretistic society where the Romans had integrated a number of different gods and just polytheism in general across their culture. They allowed for certain religious groups to practice as long as they kind of stayed out of the way and didn't create problems. And so in some respects, the current situation we're in today in our American society is similar, because we live in a society where we've integrated in all of these various religious traditions, and so you can go down the street in your neighborhood and just knock on doors, and my guess is you would find people from all different religious traditions in your neighborhood. And so from that standpoint, our society today is much like the ancient Roman society. But in addition, when our students say at our seminary take a class on an introduction to the New Testament, they're going to hear statements about some of the realities of the first century Roman Empire that allowed for the spread of the gospel. So you had the system of roads that had been built by the Roman armies that allowed for fairly easy travel by comparison to what they had had previously. You have the Pax Romana, so the general sense of peace throughout the empire because of the Roman dominance there from a military standpoint. And you had the common Greek language that was spoken around the empire. And so those things actually contributed to the ease of spreading the gospel, because you had people like Paul who could go and travel those roads in relative peace, not having to worry about being attacked along the way. And then when he showed up, whether he showed up in Ephesus or in Athens or wherever he went, he could speak to the people in Greek because that was the common language.
Mm-hmm.
And so it aided in the spread of the gospel. So in the same sense, religious liberty for us today aids in the spread of the gospel, because it allows us the freedom to proclaim the gospel, to tell the truth of Jesus's life, coming and living a perfect life and dying for us on the cross and being raised from the dead, so that we too can have eternal life. We have the freedom to proclaim that, and religious liberty kind of aids in that process by making our gospel message a little bit more accessible to everyone else, because we have the freedom to proclaim it.
Hmm. When we think of religious liberty and the gospel, I could hear some people say, well, wait a second, why are you tying those two together? One is civil, the other is sacred. How specifically does religious liberty relate to the gospel message?
Well, it's actually really interesting, because if you look particularly in the New Testament texts, and you'll see whether it's Jesus' instructions to his disciples, or you see Paul's interactions with various people, the gospel is not something that is forced upon someone. You know, there have been times in various religious traditions where you have this idea of convert or die, or someone's going to convert at the point of a sword or something mm-hmm. like that. But what we see in Scripture is that our faith and the gospel is never forced upon someone under threat of duress or of their own life, that we present the gospel and they have the freedom to respond to that gospel. And so religious liberty is actually quite in keeping with our understanding of the gospel from a New Testament standpoint.
Mm. We don't believe in coercion of people in that way, where we force them, you know, at the tip of a sword to make a statement confessing the Lord Jesus Christ, but we believe in persuasion, right? So we persuade
exactly.
them, and having religious liberty to be able to make our arguments and to all the give our reasons why we're trying to persuade them is essential then to being able to preach the gospel message, right?
That's exactly it. It gives us that freedom to proclaim, to convince others, to tell them what it is that we believe and why we think they should join us, and that they should believe the same. And you know, that's exactly, if you think what Paul is doing on Mars Hill, that's what he's doing. He's standing there amongst a field full of idols and places of worship, and he's proclaiming to them about the God that he serves and why that God is the true God, and all these other idols and everything that is surrounding him are false gods.
Mm-hmm. You know, one note we should make here, a caveat, is that religious liberty does not give Christianity a privileged position in this culture. In other words, we would fight for the religious liberty of any religion. We would, and we do. We assert that they have the right to speak about their religions as well, even though we could make a case for the influence of Christianity in the founding of this nation and so forth. Nevertheless, we would still fight on their behalf that they have a right to talk about their religions as well, right?
Yeah, and that's the hardest part for many of us to understand as it relates to religious liberty. You know, we think of it from the standpoint of, well, this allows me to be a Christian, and the government can't tell me otherwise. And while that's true, it also gives the Hindu the right to be a Hindu, and the Muslim a right to be a Muslim, and the Buddhist a right to be a Buddhist. And when they, you know, if they choose to come and knock on your door or catch you on the street corner and want to tell you about their faith and proclaim it, or to live out their faith in the culture, religious liberty gives them the right to do that. It does not place Christianity in a special status where we have religious liberty and no one else does. And that's hard for us to grasp sometimes. But if we truly believe in the truth of Christianity and in the truth of the gospel, then we shouldn't be worried about other faith groups having the same religious liberty, because that then gives us equal footing, as you've described it, in the marketplace of ideas, to make the case and persuade others about the truth of the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, the most difficult one at this point in time for us to be able to, think about having religious freedom like this is Islam. But I think that we really need to talk about that in a much more depth, because they're granted the privileges of religious freedom and so forth, but there's also a political element to it and a military element to it as well that we don't find in other religions like Hindu or Buddhism and these types of things. And it's in that way, it's subversive to the culture itself, to the American culture itself. And so I think that, you know, some work needs to be done there to say, do we just willy-nilly grant religious liberty to anyone who says that it's a religion, or is there something else that's needed there, especially in something like Islam, when they have these other elements, this military and political element involved in their religion as well, especially to the detriment of the people in the United States and the ones that are willing to give that religious liberty, then somehow we have to wrestle through that and decide how do we treat something like that. Have you done some work on that issue?
Yeah, I've thought through some of that. It's a delicate balance, because you, on one hand, we don't want government deciding what is religion and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the role of the government. At the same time, it is the government's responsibility to protect its citizens, to protect them from harm and danger. And so the delicate balance of religious liberty then is, religious liberty extends to everyone and every religious group, but your freedom to exercise that religion does not extend to then taking the rights or infringing upon the rights of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you are, you know, so any religion would have religious freedom to practice here in the United States, but if a particular individual on a religious basis or particular religion deemed that it was their right to take something from other religious groups, so whether that's money or property or anything like that, or even to take life, that's actually where the government steps in and says, hold on, no, you don't have that right.
Mm-hmm.
You can't infringe upon the rights of others. You can practice your religion, but you can't cause harm and infringe upon the rights of others. And that's been a very delicate balance, particularly among the Supreme Court, as they've thought through some of that and dealt with some of that in history. So we have to, you know, on one hand, we don't want to say that the government gets to decide what is a religion and what is not.
Right.
You know, is this just a political movement or is it a religious movement? Because, you know, there's going to be attached political concepts to pretty much any religion. The question comes is, where does the government step in to say, no, these rights cannot be infringed upon?
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the difficulty we're facing right now, is we feel in many respects that government is overstepping some of those bounds in mm-hmm. some areas, yet still needing to provide protection to the rights of others in different areas. And so that it's a really difficult mm-hmm. balance to strike there for the government and the church.
Yeah, exactly, especially with Islam, where so many of the mosques were became places where they were a breeding ground and actually offering various levels of support. And so now you're talking about going into a house of worship or watching a house of worship or sending people in there covertly in order to figure out what's going on. But after the fact, you know, it's too late when the terrorist act has been done. And because there's been so much of this in Islam, you know, it's just something that really needs to be wrestled with, I think, and I'd love to see more nuance of that spelled out so that we know exactly how to interpret it and take a position on it without destroying, in any sense, the religious liberty that we enjoy. Dr. Lino, we really appreciate your contribution to this book. We pray that the Lord would bless it and that it would do a mighty work among the people in our country here, especially that enjoy this great religious liberty. And as you say in the end of your article, you know, this should make us really think more deeply about religious liberty and really be grateful for the religious liberty that we enjoy in this country and how it helps us to spread the gospel message.
Well, thanks for having me, Kevin. It was a pleasure to talk to you again.
Okay, you too. Yeah. Let me say that you can go ahead and get a copy of this book. Again, it's entitled First Freedom. I think it was published by B&H. I was having a little trouble bringing up the website for it. But if you just type in First Freedom, or if you go out to Dr. Lino's website, like I was saying, you can find out there how you can get a copy of it. His website, again, is www.evanlino.com. And Lino is spelled L-E-N-O-W. That's L-E-N-O-W. So evanlino.com. And if you go out there, you can find out more about this book. The title of the book is Religious... His title of the chapter there is Religious Liberty in the Gospel. The actual title of the book is The First Freedoms, The Beginning and the End of Religious Liberty. This is the second edition of that book. And so it's there's a number of contributors to the book. And I don't think you'd be disappointed at all, especially on this particular subject. As I said at the top of the broadcast, it's such an important topic, especially in this political season.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.